that's just how it is, and I got nothing to hide. I live my life the way I want. I got nothing to hide, nothing at all. Life is not a fairy tale. They should know that life is real. I live my life the way I want.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to KDNK Radio. I'm your host, SS Kitty, and this is the Current Ritual Public Affairs Show. And this is our Happy New Year episode, so welcome to 2024. And today I am so honored to have in the studio a death doula. We're going to get into some interesting topics to start the new year. So Rachel Becker, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for agreeing to come and talk about these important topics that you and I have discussed. So go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners and let them know what role you're playing in the death space and a little bit of your background.
Yeah, so my name is Rachel. I grew up in Silt and I currently live in Silt. And about 2 years ago, I did a training to be an end-of-life guide and death doula. And so I support people through either the moment of death, like being with someone as they're dying, or helping people to prepare for death, whether that's counseling through any like mental or emotional blocks that come up when we think of our own death, or actually putting together documents with an advanced directive and things like that so that family and friends can know what we want. And I also do just general education around death and grief to get people more comfortable talking about these things and embracing what is inevitable in all of our lives.
Right. And it's such important work. And we really shouldn't wait until we're in stage, you know, of life to think about this stuff, you know, and that's why we're having this conversation today. So what like inspired you to get involved in this work, or, you know, why did you pursue this path?
Yeah. It's funny. There's so many different elements and experiences in my life that have led me here. But, you know, I've had significant losses in my own life starting as a teenager that really gave me a lot of empathy for what it's like to lose someone that we love so much. I also come from a background of environmental activism, and that honestly led me to death work because I just got so burnt out in this mindset of like trying to save everything. And for me, working with death has been such a relief to realize like everything in nature is in a constant state of change, and like we're a part of that. And that can be something really beautiful to realize that all of this is going to end regardless. It doesn't mean that we can't fight for what we love, but it just, for me, creates more space and invites the practice of surrender and trust in forces that are greater than me, because we can't do it all by ourselves. So,
right. Surrender and trust, big themes. And so what type of person or what skills do you think are helpful to do this work and to do it well and to not be bogged down, you know, by, because I think a lot of us avoid, you know, thinking about death, or avoid, especially when family members get end of life, you know, it's almost like we don't know how to approach it. So what type of person do you think would be suitable?
I mean, I think anyone that is interested and willing to face their own mortality first. I think that was something that came through a lot for me during my training, was the emphasis on our own understanding of our own death first. And in order to help someone else through their own death, I have to know how I feel about my own. And I have to know, like, what are my beliefs about the afterlife? What are my wishes for how I want to be cared for? That way, we can know what we want for ourselves, and through that, like, not project onto someone else what we want for ourselves onto them, because everyone gets to die, and that's, everyone deserves to have their own death experience. And so I think just like a healthy awareness of my own death and my own mortality allows, in like a constant practice of being in that reminder, I think allows the possibility to support someone else.
Like hold the space for them.
Yeah.
So in school, because something that you said, you know, your own belief about the afterlife, things like that, how mm-hmm. do you manage, or what education, what counsel do they give you about holding space for people that have a huge variety of belief systems? So how do you handle that component?
Absolutely. I think the way that I was trained was to just constantly be redirecting the attention towards what the person that's dying believes. Like, that's what's important. It's what they believe. It's not what I believe. And they might ask me what I think, but it's not really relevant what I think. You know, at the end of the day, we don't know till we get there. And so what's important is that the person that's dying has, like, their beliefs that they can rely on. And I also come from a background of interfaith ministry. I did a 2-year training in that as well, and was kind of developing my own spiritual practice called Church of Earth over the past several years,
I think I could get down with that.
Yeah.
I think we might have to talk about that on another show.
Yeah. So that's kind of also what led me here, was starting this Church of Earth project, going into this interfaith ministry space and learning about what different religions around the world practice and believe. And so I do have like a general understanding of like the world's major religions. And so being able to have that understanding and background to be able to create rituals and ceremonies for people that are relevant to their faith at the end of life, I think is really important too.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's cultural competence is what it's called in Western medicine and occupational therapy. Mm-hmm. And that's that awareness of each individual having their traditions, culture, rituals, and needing to understand that
right.
in order to intervene or interact. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't need to be evangelical at end of life necessarily. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's something that you and I definitely see eye to eye on, is we're not here to tell people what to think, but almost to help them come to their own truth.
Yeah.
It's like holding the space while they navigate and feel into their own reality or own truth. Which brings me to my next question. If there's a family that has diverse backgrounds, mm-hmm. what happens when there's conflict about belief or end of life? You know, is that one of your roles? Like, do you navigate that with families when, like, the person who's dying and maybe their children have different beliefs or perspectives on how it should go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a role that a death doula can be really helpful in, is kind of navigating those family dynamics and just being a neutral presence to kind of help people mediate conflict or questions and come to decisions about things. And so the way that I would approach it is, again, you know, deferring to the person that's dying. Like, it's their chance to die. They may have spent their whole life devoted to this one particular religious tradition, and that's really important to them. And as much as we can help each other kind of stand back and allow that person to have their experience, I think that's what's important in that moment. And then we can also help, you know, other people that might have different religious beliefs in that space find meaningful ways for them to process what's happening in their own way, you know.
Right.
But again, allowing the dying person to have their experience.
Right. And so would you say that your interventions are mostly conversational, or are there other types of services or offerings that are part of the death doula role?
Yeah, I think the conversational and counseling aspect for sure. I'm really fascinated by ceremony and ritual, and so I would love to bring that into my practice more for people that are open to it. And kind of creating meaningful rituals for people, whether it's like processing grief or, you know, being able to let go of something. I think that's an element. And then I think I'm also an artist. And so a lot of my artwork is focused on death and decomposition and, you know, change and mystery. And so I'm interested in creating more like art installations and art projects that can invite people into these conversations as well.
Beautiful. I love that. I've been very interested the past few years on how experiential art, performance art, visual art you know, could heal the nervous system or, you mm-hmm. know, create those internal dialogues and spark the curiosity or spark those thoughts. So I think that's a wonderful endeavor. Going back to something you said earlier about facing your own mortality, mm-hmm. you know, in order to be able to hold space for our loved ones, our community members, our friends, family that are transitioning. How do we do that? Like, can we unpack that a little bit? Like, yeah. what does it really mean? Like, let's go through. Mm-hmm. And we could even practice, like, if you act like I'm a client or something and, like, mm-hmm. help me unpack my mortality. Because that's what I'm really curious. And I think the listeners, you know, might benefit from us unpacking that topic a bit more.
Totally. So, and this is all informed by the trainings that I've done. But something that I like to do for people is, for an end-of-life consultation, for example, I would send over a few questions for someone to look through over the course of a couple of weeks before we meet, because sometimes it takes a while to, like, contemplate all these things. And some of those questions are, like, what are you most concerned about when you think about your own death? Like, what are your fears?
My son.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a six-year-old, so that's, like, the main thing for me. And I've thought mm-hmm. about that. And I actually have been in the midst of dreaming up what my advance directive should be, you know, mm-hmm. And people think, oh, that's later in life. But I'm like, no, like, you should have those things figured out mm-hmm. sooner than later. But yeah, that's my main thing, is who's going to care for my son,
right?
Who will raise him? Will he be okay? Mm-hmm. That's my main thing about it, because I'm at peace with my death. I'd say, for the most part. I grew up, my dad owned funeral homes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
he was third generation, like, mortician, funeral director. Mm-hmm. So death was always a topic at the dinner table. Like, who had died that day? Who came in? You know, like, so that's part of the reason that I have such a curiosity and propensity, and I've mm-hmm. done hospice work in the past, too. But yeah, I'd say that's my fear mm-hmm. is about, who will handle raising my son.
And so knowing that, like, that there's so much there. And so with that information, we could go into creating a plan that includes who would be caring for your son, and then maybe having conversations with your son about that. And just, I think the more that we can write things down and talk to the people in our life so they know what we want, just the better off we all will be, so that we're not at the end of life wondering, like, you know, if someone's unresponsive and not able to speak for themselves, we don't know what they want. But if you've had those conversations with people in your life, you have it written down, it's just so much easier for everyone, and there's so much more peace of mind knowing that you're doing what that person wanted. Right. So I think knowing what your fears are is an important place to start. Also knowing what makes your life meaningful, you know, like, what are your favorite experiences of being in a body? And I think all of those types of questions can lead us to, like, what do we value most about our life, and what do we love, and what are we gonna miss when we're gone or when we lose someone? Because I think the knowing what we love informs the loss, and it all kind of intermixes together when we realize, like, what we're grieving for is actually what we love.
Right. And that's where, I guess, when you identify, you know, what lights you up, what brings you joy, then we remind ourselves, give that, like, mm-hmm. incorporate that into your life, you know, don't mm-hmm. wait to call in those experiences, you know, that light you up and bring you joy. Because I think a lot of us can get sort of bogged down in the day-to-day tasks mm-hmm. and kind of running on autopilot with, you know, feeling like, oh, I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this, and mm-hmm. and we forget we get to do all these things, and we get to invite in joy, hopefully, or focus on our own happiness, because, you know, what's the point of running on a hamster wheel mm-hmm. the whole time?
Well, yeah, it's like, it's a reminder that it's all temporary. Mm-hmm. It's all impermanent, you know?
Right. And so my next question is about grief. Mm-hmm. How do you help people unpack grief, or what's some of the counsel that you provide around that experience of being human?
Mm-hmm. So I will do either one-on-one kind of counseling sessions or group study on grief as well. And I'm interested in doing grief ceremonies. That's not something I've done yet. I've participated in some, but I would like to lead and facilitate those as well. because I think it can be really powerful to have other people witness our witness us in our grieving process and witness others. And so, yeah, I think the main thing that I want to get across about grief is that it's almost like a skill that we can develop. It doesn't necessarily, I mean, I think we can, our bodies know what to do with grief if we are in tune with our bodies and like let them lead us through grief. but for a lot of us, we haven't been taught how to grieve. We haven't been taught how to mourn or like what to do with these like really big, transformative, like insanely profound emotions. And so a lot of times I think we can get stuck and are not feel safe or comfortable expressing these really like wild, you know, again, transformative emotions. And so I think just what I would guide people through is just like, can we sink more into our bodies and see what our bodies are wanting, needing to do? Do you need to rest? Do you need to scream? Do you need to go on a run? Do you need to dance? Do you need to laugh? Do you need to just vent or just sob and cry? Or are you just feeling numb and like, that's okay? And you, like, you know, there's so many different expressions of grief. And I think having less judgment around, I'm not doing it right, or, you know, or I don't like how my loved one is grieving because it makes me uncomfortable. You know, there's everyone's gonna, it's gonna show up differently for everyone, and just having more acceptance for the fact that, you know, we all experience this big thing differently.
Right. And a big thing that is something I've thought about and grappled with a lot is the whole concept of, oh, let it go.
Mm.
Like, I have a really hard time with the concept of let it go, because I'm like, actually, these really tremendous experiences that cause the deepest grief, I want to integrate that awareness and wisdom. I don't want to just let it go or mm-hmm. suppress it or avoid, you know, what it brings up in me. And so that in my private practice, in my own life, that's what I encourage people to do, like you said about the body, is find in your body where you're holding tension. Like, mm-hmm. where is the resistance in your body? Where have you suppressed yourself or quieted yourself or said, nope, I'm not going to feel that way, I'm going to feel this way? Or I think a lot of times I think that we use addiction to replace grief work,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. So mm-hmm. we'll drink or smoke or whatever our preferred escape may be.
Mm-hmm.
That's that, like, when thinking about all these big topics and what it means to be human and looking at human behavior, why do we do what we do?
Mm-hmm.
I really do believe that because we don't know how to grieve and we don't have those rituals, that we end up in addiction cycles. And, yeah. and that also looks at, you know, a lot of people who struggle with addiction have serious trauma histories,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then, and so looking at that, you know, and I'm curious, while we're in this mode, when I've thought about, okay, what did Indigenous people do? How did they grieve? What did that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pre-colonization, you know, more pagan and Indigenous tradition. And part of me thinks that the regular community, like you said, being in community is really potent. I think that they probably had the community gatherings, you know, where they would drum and sing and dance and mm-hmm. be around a fire. And part of me thinks that mobilized that energy in their body,
right,
in a way that that's why they didn't have trauma or PTSD or therapy or, you know, think concepts like that, because those rituals, those grieving rituals were built into the culture
mm-hmm.
where there were like regular at regular intervals, you got to move that through and to see your neighbor who, you know, lost a baby wailing and crying by the fire and, you know, connect with that grief and acknowledge it and then yeah. be able to see your own. So what do you think about that theory? Is that in alignment with what you're seeing and experiencing working with people?
Yeah, I think the word that you said that is standing out the most to me is movement. And like through those types of rituals, it's allowing what we're feeling to move. It's not just getting stuck. And I think grief is something especially that needs to move. And earlier you were saying, talking about this concept of just let it go. I think rather than just let it go, I would say let it run its course. And that course can continue through a whole lifetime. Like, I don't want to say that, you know, you're going to grieve once and be done, because that's just not a reality. At least in my experience. And I'll also say, as far as listening to our body, like, it took me a really long time, and it's still hard for me sometimes to hear what my body is saying. And that's a lifelong practice too, especially in such a disembodied culture, where like all the focus is on what's happening in the mind.
Right.
To really sink down into the experience of the body, I think can be really aided by dancing, moving, exercise, singing, playing music in general, drumming, like you mentioned. Singing especially, I'm finding, is so useful for me. It just, because when I'm not processing my own grief, I feel it like kind of between my throat and my solar plexus.
Right.
Just this like stuck energy. And when I can sing, or at least talk about what's going on, I do, like, there's a movement. Something comes up and out. You know, there's such an interesting mystery to the body that I think is really fascinating. And I don't fully understand it, but I'm just learning anecdotally from my own experiences and the experience of others what works well. And
right.
Movement, I think, is the key.
And I'm pretty positive. That's, you know, when I started my private practice almost 8 years ago, it was because I was like, consciousness is all through the tissue. Like, the whole body is consciousness. It's not just in the brain. Like, the brain activity, the brain is a specialized organ, how the heart is a specialized organ, but the consciousness actually runs all throughout. And so mobilizing energy in the body, mobilizing emotion, letting yourself cry or scream, like you said, or move or shake, to me is how you move that stuff. And then also kind of just feeling the sensation in your body and feeling the emotion and trying to detach from the story. The story is what kind of keeps us in suffering sometimes, I feel like. And so when you can fully feel those feelings and then detach from the story and just be present and witness what your body's feeling, that can be a gateway into really processing some deep subconscious grief. Mm-hmm. And learning to grieve well is sort of how to move gracefully through life, because that's the older I get, you know, and the experiences that I have, I'm like, wow, life is really experiencing joy in between grieving cycles.
Yes.
Yes, I relate to that a lot.
Right. Well, we're coming up. We've got like 4 minutes left. This has gone by quickly for me. So two things that I wanted to hear from you about. One is how people access your services or learn more about you if they're interested. Mm-hmm. If you want to go ahead and speak to that.
Yeah, so I have a website. It's www.rachelzbecker.com. That's Rachel with an E-L. So I'll have information on my website about how you can get in touch with me and the services that I offer. And then I also have a newsletter, which I send out monthly or seasonally, and there's information about that on my website as well.
Awesome. And then, let's see, the last question. Leave our audience with your thoughts on how your work as a death doula has shaped your perspective on life, death, and the human experience.
It's honestly it's transformed my experience of being. I feel so much more lucid for the most part, and just appreciative of, you know, the time that I have. And it's a work in progress. Like, I still will wake up in the middle of the night with this realization that I'm gonna die and I might die before I'm ready, you know. But I think it's not a matter of if we're going to die, it's a matter of when. It's not a matter of if we're going to grieve, it's a matter of when. And so I think just the more that we can practice that in our daily life, the more we can realize that change is, you know, a natural part of our existence on this planet for whatever reason. And the more that we can embrace change rather than resisting it, I think, I don't want to say it's going to be easier, because I don't want to make any guarantees, but I think maybe we can live our lives with a little bit more love and grace and just compassion.
Right. Because love and grace and compassion are the antidote to fear.
Mm-hmm.
and separation. Well, thank you so much for diving into this topic with me today. And for the listeners out there that are like, why is Kat leading off current ritual with with death this year? It's really because, like what you had said before, learning to die is really learning to live.
Mm-hmm.
How to appreciate the time you have here, how to create joy and access joy, even in the mundane, you know, the day-to-day can become sacred if you allow it to be so, and if you're present, you know, with that. And that's, I tell my clients all the time, you have to check yourself every time you say, well, I have to do this. It's like, no, we get to do.
Mm-hmm. We choose to.
Yeah, we choose to share time with people. We choose to show up for community. We choose to make a meal. So let's all kick off this new year, 2024, being present for ourselves, present for each other. And if you don't have advanced directives or like plans in place to help support your family, definitely reach out to Rachel and get that support and have those conversations. And don't leave tragedy to the unknown, because what you said earlier, the struggles and the pain when a family is left having to make those choices for someone after the fact is really painful. And it's and that kind of suffering is preventable if we just have these conversations a bit sooner.
Right.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for coming on the program. This has been SS Kitty with KDNK Radio. And until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and go ahead and lean into that discomfort a little bit. You can do it. Until next time.